The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Welcome to Webster Groves Health Radio. I'm your host, Matt Factor, from Factor Physical Therapy. That's located in Webster Groves at the corner of Watson and Laclede Station Road in Yorkshire Village. And I'm here with my co-host, David Factor. On Webster Groves Health Radio, we discuss health-related issues along with improving our community. For today's show, we invited on Dr. Pam Gronemeyer, who is a physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for a National Health Program Illinois, and board member of Missourians for Single Payer. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gronemeyer.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, terrific, terrific. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, I'm a practicing pathologist. I've been a practicing pathologist for 40 plus years. I operate a small business, and I'm also a small business owner, a practicing physician, and I'm a patient of healthcare because I have to get healthcare. So I've been involved in this single payer movement probably for about the last 15 years. I mean, for many years, I thought healthcare was proceeding okay. And then all of a sudden, I realized it wasn't, and how we were leaving many people out, and how we need to be more inclusive. And I came to the true belief, not that I didn't always believe it, but I came to the realization that healthcare is a human right, and we need to ensure healthcare for all Americans.
As a doctor, what do you specialize in?
I'm a pathologist. I look at any surgical specimens, cytologies. I'm the person who actually renders the diagnosis. Plus, we direct all the laboratories in the hospital. So all the blood bank, micro, we're in charge of those. So, plus we also do autopsies once in a while.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. So, okay, so you've been doing single payer, or you've been interested in single payer for 15 years or so. What got you interested?
Well, I began to realize how unfair everything was. And, you know, especially, I mean, I really, when I started my business, I began to realize how expensive healthcare was. Because up until that time, you know, I'm always hired as an independent contractor. So therefore, I never am an employee. So I'm never provided healthcare. But I have a husband who worked for a company. And so I always received my healthcare from him. But when I went into my private business, I only had like five employees, but the two employees who didn't have a husband or no other health care, I was able to purchase single plans for them. But once you get to the age of 50, you have one health problem, you can't get a plan anymore.
Oh, wow.
So then I had to go and start looking in the market for a plan, and I had to come up with a plan. Then I realized how much it costs. And a small business, I mean, I was up to at one time with about six employees, paying $120,000 a year for healthcare.
Oh, wow. Wow. So tell me again about this. So after you get to the age of 50, if you have a medical problem, then they don't want to let you sign up for your own independent insurance?
Right. You couldn't get a solo plan. They weren't available. And I mean, even up until that time, if you could get it, mm-hmm. it was very costly. Yeah. I mean, it's because the prices are so prohibitive.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so it's kind of no wonder why so many people start going uninsured, right? Because you can't pay for it.
They have no choice. I mean, realistically, I mean, they do have the plans that you used to hear about on the radio, the catastrophic plans, where mm-hmm. you could pay $100 a month, but you're paying $100 for nothing because you can't really use them. So, I mean, I had no choice. And I mean, my employees, the way I look at it, are very important to my business. They're my best resource. So, and I have tried always to get the lowest copay and the lowest deductible and no premiums if I can. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've tried all the time to do that. And right now we're lucky because none of my employees or their dependents pay a premium. And then they right now have a zero deductible.
How were you able to achieve that?
Well, you know, I have to work through the health plans that are available, and primarily in the St. Louis area, anybody who's in the St. Louis area, it's almost all United Healthcare. Mm-hmm. So you have to work with United Healthcare. I mean, you have to, I have a broker, and I, every year I have to come up with, I have to look at a new plan and see what I want to take. But I mean, the one thing is I'm making the decision for my employees. Plus, the problem is we can't really necessarily give raises because all of our raises are used up in the healthcare. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, which is not fair, but I try to let my, you know, I think my employees appreciate the fact that they don't have any premiums or deductibles.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's the minimum.
Right. Is there a minimum number of employees you have to have in order to be able to provide a group rate for them?
Well, first, when I signed up, you had to have, no matter how many employees you had to have, like, I think it was at least 50%. Mm-hmm. So the first 2 years, I actually went on the plan, came out of my husband's plan so that I would have enough to just qualify. But then I didn't have to. But by the time, I mean, the problem with any healthcare plan, the older you get, the more costly you are. So, I mean, when I left mine, I was probably like $1,600 a month.
Wow.
Just for me.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. So that kind of brings me to like one of the, it's kind of a broad question, but so what do you think is really wrong with our U.S. healthcare system? I mean, we've kind of touched a little bit on it, is the expense is pretty bad. What would other things you'd say?
Well, it's market-based. I mean, the insurance companies all have boards of directors, and as we know, the primary purpose, every corporation, their primary purpose is to secure the money for their shareholders. It's not to care about, you know, I mean, we're actually, the patient sometimes is sort of ancillary. I mean, and the provider's ancillary. We're sort of just problems, and they're trying to make sure they secure their profits.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say it that way. I mean, sometimes patients come and they're confused that when they sign up for an insurance plan, that's an agreement or a contract that they signed with their insurance company. And then they come in and then sometimes they're upset because they have to pay a $50 copay or a $25 copay. And they don't really understand how that works. And I try to explain to them, well, every time you're paying a copay or you have some coinsurance, just think of that as a private profit. And so that profit is just going and it's helping for those companies to offset what their cost is and providing you care.
Well, right. They I mean, what happens is they claim it's part of the 20 or the 15-20% they're using for administrative fees. But the problem is those administrative fees aren't really, I mean, first of all, lots of it's probably in advertising. First of all, lots of it in CEO's pay. A lot of it is just for profit. I mean, so we're so burdened with administrative costs. Plus, the other thing about administrative costs, for me as a, I have two pathologists, and we have a freestanding cytology and histology lab. I have one full-time person who does billing. And I mean, that one-time full-time person plus the salary, plus all the, I mean, you can't do billing without having all the hardware, the software that you need to bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's so costly. Plus, I have to sign how many contracts with different insurance companies. I can be kicked off the insurance companies if they decide their network is too big. And we're at the mercy of the insurance companies.
Right. Well, it seems like this has become such a politicized issue, and it seems like that's unfortunate because every single one of us at some time are going to have to go to the healthcare system, and we're going to have to deal with ourselves. And it doesn't. And whenever we explain our experience to each other, it's like, yeah, no kidding, that's how it was for me. But it doesn't seem like everybody can kind of wrap their mind. They're kind of derailed by certain political words or hot button topics, and then it doesn't seem like that there tends to be as much traction. And so I'm glad that you're here to help us kind of understand that more.
Well, they have been derailed. I mean, basically, you know, right now in the United States, we have three different healthcare systems. We have a for-profit, which is based on the healthcare industry. We have the VA, which is truly a national health system, whereby the physicians and the hospitals and all the equipment work for the government. And then we have Medicare, which Medicare is not, not socialized medicine. Medicare is privately delivered and publicly funded. But so much has happened with people not totally, I mean, it's been sold to so many people that Medicare is socialized medicine, and we're not talking about socialized medicine. We're talking about you having free choice of your doctor, picking out what you want to do. It's not, the government doesn't tell, Medicare patients where to go. Medicare mm-hmm. patients pick out their own doctors.
Right, and a lot of times that they're preferred and welcomed with a red carpet, you know. A lot of times a lot of offices are marketing just to Medicare patients.
Well, it's ridiculous to believe that there are many, I mean, the majority of physicians who enroll in Medicare is greater. I mean, you know, it's probably like 95%. Mm-hmm. Most, I mean, there are some of these groups that are out there, like the Benjamin Rush Institute and the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons who want concierge and want to get cash for work. But Medicare works. I mean, I don't, mm-hmm. I just can't. Every physician knows Medicare works.
So, since you're part of the single payer movement, the Physicians for National Health Program and Missourians for Single Payer, what is single payer health reform or a national health care program?
Well, okay, single payer health care is basically enhanced Medicare for all. We want to take the Medicare that we currently have and make it better, because mm-hmm. we know that there are a lot of retired people who are on Medicare who aren't getting their pills, who can't afford medical care because all the, you know, because they have to have a supplemental, or they have to have, because of the prescription drug plan, they have to have a drug plan because they can't afford their medicines. I mean, so we know Medicare could be better. So the idea is that you have enhanced Medicare for all, whereby once you're born in this country, or however we decide to deal with
to include people,
right, the immigrant population, that you're enrolled in healthcare, just like Canada. I mean, Canada, they get a card at birth and they're enrolled in healthcare. They don't have to sign up for anything. They go to the hospital, they turn in their card, they have no copay, no deductible, and they're taken care of.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes people aren't seeing the big picture. So, like, we all pay for each other to have smooth roads to drive on, right? I might not ever drive down your street, but for some reason I don't have a problem paying for it. But when it comes to healthcare, it seems like people are upset about covering their neighbor, whereas we all benefit from there being less disease and infection and problems throughout our society that's spread throughout all of us.
Well, it's really ironic that somebody would think you could build a bubble, no matter how rich you were, that you could build a bubble around yourself. And if you had an epidemic, you're not going to get sick, because that's just, I mean, anybody can get sick at any time. You know, disease doesn't know, say, well, I'm only going to pick on that person because they're poor. They pick on everybody. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I mean, you know, we really need to, I mean, and the biggest problem, I think, in the United States, it's hard to sell sometimes healthcare as a human right, because we have this, you know, and I shouldn't say this, but I always hearken it back to we have all this idea that we can pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. You know, I believe that, mm-hmm. Ralph Waldo Emerson. I believed all that. And I mean, it did work when I was a kid that we did have a good American dream. But now you can't do that. We need to take care of each other. As I view the country, our health is only as good as the sickest person in this country.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's true. And nobody is above, you know, being human, right?
So things are sick.
Right.
And so
unless you're the bionic man or a bionic woman, I don't think, because you never know what's going to befall you. I mean, and it's not all, I mean, it's the fact that they say that you have to make your choices. Now, I agree you shouldn't smoke. I agree you probably shouldn't drink. You shouldn't do illegal drugs, but you haven't, I mean, that doesn't mean, I guarantee you, you're going to live forever and you're not ever going to be sick, because things happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And you can, and I think everybody's experienced that every flu season, right? There's not one person living right now who hasn't been sick at least once.
You're right. I mean, and we know that, I mean, especially this flu season, since we've had a not quite a perfect match, but still the flu shot helps everybody get over their infections.
So in what different ways would the single payer differ from our current health care system?
Well, we wouldn't be purchasing health insurance from insurance companies, for-profit insurance companies.
So I wouldn't have to spend hours looking through insurance companies trying to figure out which one's the best, which one I got the copay for, if it's going to cover my disease that I don't have yet.
Well, and that's really hard. I mean, like I said, with me, it was hard because I'm making the decision for my employees. Mm-hmm. But I mean, me making the decision was hard. And I'm a physician, but those poor people, I mean, the problem with the ACA is they were given all those choices. And I mean, once they make a choice, sometimes they're almost held up, they're inert, because they think, gosh, if I make the wrong choice, what's going to happen? So, I mean, I think it's way too confusing. I mean, to figure out, because I mean, there are all these little things that you have to read about your maximum out of pocket, your copays, your deductible. I mean, every year your copays go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, to say that even as a physician, it's hard for you to kind of go through the minutia because you really understand what these terms mean. Now, think of somebody who has no medical knowledge or understanding of anything. They're basically preying on these people being victims. I mean, you'd have to get a college course in medical terminology. You'd have to know what all this stuff actually means. And then you could start trying to make some informed decisions. And then also you need to know, well, what's the average amount of money that people are going to spend this year per person? I think the number this year is about $9,990 per person, they estimate, that each person's going to have to pay. And so if you don't have those numbers, I don't know how you're going to go ahead and make a decision if, oh, I'm going to save a few dollars here or cut my premium there, or do I want this high of a deductible? People don't even really realize when they sign up for some plans and they come in to be seen and they say, well, I have a $15,000 deductible. Well, that's the same as no insurance almost.
It's really hard. I mean, the other thing too is that in the United States, the way our system was built after World War II, because there was like a pay freeze on everybody, mm-hmm. the way that they could attract better employees was to offer them health care benefits. So that's how the employee-based health care came in the United States. But what has happened is employers, I mean, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm an employer and I consider my health care, my employees' health care important. But what's happening is the employers are backing out of their payments. They're sending money over what they used to pay in premiums. It's being shifted to their employees, so they're paying a higher premium. The deductibles, I mean, have really gone up. I mean, I work in the hospitals. I'm hospital based, and the hospitals used to have wonderful insurance for their patients, mm-hmm. for their employees. But now their deductibles are going up. So I mean, they're outpricing people, and the employee, I mean, I'm not sure every employer necessarily is totally committed to giving their employee health care.
And so it would do two things, I'm assuming, is that right now it would take the burden off of some businesses where they wouldn't have to go ahead and find a health care program for their, or a health plan for their employees. And then also their employees would not have to feel like they just had to work at a job just to have health care on their own if we had a single payer system.
Well, it would be. And the other thing is, though, what we would be happening, I mean, somebody has to pay for it. I mean, I love it mm-hmm. when people say it's free. Well, this is not free. This is communal health care. This is, we all participate. So basically, I mean, there are many ways you could fund it. I think, you know, some people say a progressive income tax. Or you could fund it the way we fund Medicare. I pay an employer's tax for my Medicare to pay into the Medicare trust fund, and then the employees pay a little tax. And that's what we would do, is convert that into a single payer plan. But I believe that the premium that I would pay that I would pay in taxes would be less than the rising amount I have to pay the health insurance company every year.
That makes sense. I just wanted to remind our listeners that we are listening to Webster Groves Health Radio on KWRH LP. With Matt Factor and David Factor of Factor Physical Therapy. And our guest is Dr. Pam Gronemeyer, a physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for National Health Program Illinois, and a board member of Missourians for Single Payer.
Yeah, I think Dr. Pam, I think that was a good comment that you just made. So I think the statistics are showing now that under a single payer program, most people would pay either the same or less than what they're paying now for 95% of the population.
Oh, basically what you would do is, I mean, you may have a small payroll tax, but you would have no copay, no deductible. And I mean, really need to do something about the pharmaceuticals, because basically, you know, we the United States pay more for pharmaceuticals than anybody else in the world. And it's not necessarily because we're funding all the research is what, you know, that are, we're funding a lot of the advertising. And I mean, we're barraged every night by 800 million commercials advertising medicine.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good point. And I think, what are some other things, like, so pre-existing conditions under a single payer program, do people have to worry about a pre-existing condition?
No, there's no such thing as a pre-existing condition. I mean, being humans. Born, yeah. I guess, is being born is a pre-existing condition, but that's the one they accept. I mean, so.
Yeah, being born human, right?
Right.
Do you have to go, you know, do you have to sign up every year, or is it just a continuous form of coverage? It's not something that restarts every year, right?
Right. It would be continuous. Just, I mean, the Canadian system works. I mean, the Canadian, and I mean, their system's called Medicare, mm-hmm. and their system works. They sign up. I mean, now they do pay more taxes, mm-hmm. but they realize they get something for their taxes.
And they're not sitting there saying, well, my back really hurts, but I'm waiting to fill my deductible before I go get the MRI. So maybe I'll wait 4 or 5 months, and then that turns into, okay, something else happened, and then it starts over at the beginning of the year, and then they all pay out of pocket again, so they don't have to worry about deductibles and things like that.
No, I mean, the Canadian system is excellent. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, I mean, we've forever heard about wait times and doctors coming from Canada. The wait times are monitored. I mean, wait times are only for elective procedures. There's never any wait time for any emergency. So mm-hmm. you're triaged immediately and you're taken care of. The healthcare is excellent. I mean, I don't think anyone would argue that their healthcare isn't as good as ours. I mean, and it just works. I mean, but the only thing is with the Canadians is if you interview Canadians, I mean, they're very proud of their healthcare system, and they truly do embrace the fact that they are all one country and they are one people. And they, I mean, that's the biggest problem here is it's hard to sell single payer in the United States, basically, as healthcare as a human right, because you'll run into people that just do not accept that. But mm-hmm. business-wise, I mean, we could do much better because they, what do they estimate the cost of extra cost because the car companies or the car companies provide healthcare? I'm what, $1,500 extra for a car? I mean, we could be much more competitive. I mean, than we are now if we had a single payer healthcare.
Right, right. And I think by dealing with problems in the population the right way at the beginning, then these wouldn't grow into these massive chronic hard to treat conditions where people are just like floundering with, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 year histories of pain that seemingly have no end in sight. And it's because people are, you know, these deductibles and these copays and things like that, that is something that discourages people from consuming healthcare. Even if it's 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, people don't really realize that they're already kind of self-rationing their care. And when they do that, there's an effect from that, right?
I mean, chronic diseases, look how many people with diabetes. I mean, it's much better to take care of diabetes than it is to have somebody go into renal failure and have to be on dialysis. I mean, heart disease. Any number of things that we can handle better. Now, prevention's not going to cure everything. I believe in prevention, but it's not going to cure everything. But we really need to get a handle on, I mean, we have a lot of chronic illnesses in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And prevention can keep it from getting too costly, because that really is what happens when you go ahead and go to the most extreme level.
Well, it's manageable. I mean, and going to the emergency room doesn't cover a chronic disease. They treat the event, mm-hmm. but you're not going to get long-term care out of the emergency room.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. So it is interesting that I sometimes tell my patients that there's really no shortage of sick people in this country, and there's no shortage of disabled people, but we have a very big country, and you can kind of push them to the fringes. But if you ask them, everybody has somebody in their family who's still, you know, limping around or dealing with something, and it's just sometimes not being properly addressed. And when you start digging into it, people are being run down. Like, it's unfortunate, because I can see it just in this city. I can see it in people's faces. They are being run ragged by the way that everything has been set up, and their health is suffering significantly.
Well, they really, I mean, it's really an extra burden on top of having to be sick. You have to worry about being sick. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, and yeah, we know that, you know, your mental status has an effect on your health too. It's just not, I mean, we should be kinder and a better nation where we care about each other.
Yeah, and I think that you know, it's interesting. I mean, we've tried, you know, the ACA way, which is the Affordable Care Act, which is the Obamacare. And I think that people are seeing a lot of the flaws with it. There were some things about it where they tried to expand the care to some people, but they largely just handed more power just to the same entities that were, you know, harming our population. So I think that, you know, if people really want to look hard at the different options, they could see, and if they want to do their own research instead of just, you know, taking everybody's word for it, I think that they would start to see, you know, there's another solution that's possible.
All right. I would like to thank Dr. Pamela Gronemeyer, who is a physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for National Health Program, Illinois, and board member of Missourians for Single Payer. And we'd like to thank our listeners for joining us for Webster Groves Health Radio. Join us for upcoming shows at 9:30 a.m. and Thursdays at 2:30 p.m. That was part one of our show. And if you'd like to hear part two, then tune in next week.